Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Today's show, again, deals with metaphysics, spirituality, issues in science as well. I always throw things in about scientific issues. And I thought tonight that we would talk about a subject I've dealt with before, but I always add new things and embellish and explain more. So tonight we'll talk about the lower mental plane and what life is like there. A lot of people have a pretty good understanding on astral subjects. I shouldn't say a lot, but some people do. And but when we talk about the mental world, or some people call it monastic life, that's like, what? What's he talking about? What's lower mental? Is that like, that's like the bottom part of the mental world, and then there's the upper part or something? Yeah, there is. That's exactly what it is. Well, I'm going to explain all that tonight. And for those of you who have some familiarity with this subject, you'll be interested probably in hearing the greater detail and some of the more advanced things I'll be talking about. So let me start off by first going through the very basics. I don't know who's listening. Some people may have never read anything I've written, may have never heard it me before. Others may have said, oh, gee, I know all that stuff. Well, that's okay. It's always good to go back over a few things. Life as we understand it is seemingly a physical world event. You know, we're all here right now. You're listening to me, right? But it really is just a very small fraction of the time that we live in what I call, and what most people who are metaphysicians call, a lifetime. And a lifetime really incorporates the beginning of a soul's journey into the densest part of existence, which begins in the physical world, where we are right now. But it only lasts a short time because the physical bodies, due to the density of the energies and a lot of friction caused by our own, we'll call them more selfish or self-focused thought processes, cause our bodies to wear out pretty quick. They don't last long at all. Generally speaking, a body lasts somewhere in, I'd say 75, 80 years on an average if you looked at the whole planet. Some people certainly make it to be 100. But the fact of the matter is, few people get beyond 100. I mean, once in a while we have somebody who's 110. I think the record's 121 in the last century or 222 or something like that. But the point is that it's very difficult to live much longer than that in the physical world. And after we die physically, we go on for, after a very brief time, in etheric form, which is the part, the electromagnetic part of the physical world. But after that, we exist in an astral body, which is always with us, but we don't use it much. We get our feelings from that body. That's the senses of that body pick up what people call, oh, I got a feeling, I can feel this or that. And that feeling, that emotional content, some people will call it, or astral, I prefer that, but that is much longer lasting. You might say, well, if it's so less dense, how can it survive? Well, the good news is that it survives because it's processing energy that also is very less in density and causes a lot less harm when you retain it. So you can be pretty selfish and live quite a long time in the astral world, literally. A considerable length of time based upon time as it exists in that realm. That realm, because of a thing called dilation, yeah, it's an Einsteinian thing, has to do with relativistic physics. And because people are living what is known as a higher frequency, and due to a phase change, which is related to the wavelength of energy, not just the frequency, you get into some strange changes in physics. A thing called the quantum constant, which is really a very basic and important part of physics, changes, and people literally have more time to live in than what we consider time here. As an example, they live on an average 30 to 40 up to 50 years on an average in the astral world. Some people live a very short time. And some people can live longer than what I'm telling you. That's years here. But a year here can be a dozen, 15 times greater due to this time dilation in the astral world. And you're actually living there. So time becomes a critical issue in changing our reality. Because if you're living 15 times 30, that's 450 years. And that's a huge difference in here. And living that long gives people a different perspective on life. They may grow older if they live selfishly, because their ability to control their bodies and senses changes as they use up their creative imagination if it's self-focused. But if they focus more out and become more spiritual, which the plane itself, the whole dimension, tends to lead people to do, they don't age as quickly as they did while they were physically alive, which is good news, because you wouldn't want to live 450 years in a wheelchair and unable to remember your last name or any name for that matter. That would not be a cool existence. But most people do better than that, considerably better. So the astral world is really kind of like where everybody says, well, gee, I'm going to have a lot of fun when I get the astral world. You can fly, yeah. You can instantly appear in some respects for some people, as long as you've been to the location you're moving to. It's not exactly Star Trek, but it's getting close. You can go from one place to another without actually doing the movement thing. But most people actually still rely mostly on movement, because to go someplace, you have to have been there. And it uses up a great deal of imagination, because you have to imagine where you are, which is weird, I know. You've got to imagine where you are. You can't just sense where you are. You have to imagine where you are. And then you have to replace that imagination with where you want to go. And you got to see yourself doing this to get there. And for a lot of people, that's more than they can imagine. And so it's only done by people who have really good, intact imagination. As you age, you may not have that in the astral world, so you give up some of that. But you can fly. Hey, flying is cool. And you can fly at enormous rates of speed, depending upon the dimension you're in, and again, your ability to use astral energy, which has a lot to do with imagination. And so you could fly at hundreds, even 1,000 or more miles an hour. No, there's no wind in your face because of the way astral energy is. There is an atmosphere of sorts. It's the equivalent of atmosphere. But breathing is really almost an option. And as you fly there, because your thought is moving ahead of you, usually, you don't get much sense of, like getting blasted by 1,000-mile-an-hour wind or anything like that. As a matter of fact, the sensation is one of almost total, we'll say, relaxation and a sense of peace in movement for the most part in the astral world for a lot of people. Now, for people who become older, they can't fly very fast. As they lose their imagination, they literally are swamped by the effects of the astral wind and other issues. And it could affect them. But for most people, that isn't the case. So the fantastic thing about the astral world is that you get to live there for a long time, and it can be a great experience. And it has with it, hopefully, a lessons to be learned in being more loving and other spiritual issues as well. There's also spiritual helpers that are available. Unlike in the physical world, you might say, well, why aren't I appearing here? I want a spiritual helper right away, you know. Well, that's not going to really work, because to have take on form in the physical world is tremendously detrimental to one's life expectancy, especially the eating up of time and other factors. Because, see, if you were in the astral world serving, and you could, let's say you could come to the physical world, but you'd be losing tremendous amounts of time in the process. And it'd be very difficult to keep any kind of life in the astral world and serve in this world. Unless you're not a member of the human kingdom anymore. Then you don't have to worry about those kinds of things. Get around them. Okay, so, and for a lot of people, the astral life is the intriguing element. You know, like, hey, that's it. It's got to be a cool place to be. Well, I got news. News is that if you really live in a fairly spiritual way in the astral world, and you didn't do too badly in the mental, in the physical world while you were physically alive, there's a lot better place to go, and that is the mental world. So people who are fairly spiritually developed and serve in the higher parts, the higher planes, higher subdimensions of the astral world, really look forward to their mental life. They say, well, that's the place to be, because they understand what's awaiting them for the most part. And that's and you're going to understand, hopefully, by the end of tonight's show. I hope so, anyway. So let me continue on. By the way, if you want to call in and ask any questions, if you have any comments, hey, do so. The number is on the screen that you are looking at. So you can do that, and that's great. I just wanted to mention that. Throw it in one time. Okay, so people eventually leave the astral world. They die. They don't die quite the same way that people tend to die in the physical world, because they know, first of all, they're not going to really die because they've been there, done that, and they have a much better spiritual understanding. Not 100%. Not like they know everything, but they've got at least that part down. They say, well, I died from the physical world, and I'm now in the astral world. They can remember physical life. There's a lot of people think they can't, but they can. Now, they can forget a few things over time. I mean, sure, if you've lived there for 500 years, you might start, getting a little rusty in everything you did while you were young in the physical world and everything. Because, it's a long time. It's hard to remember all that stuff. Still, they know they were physically alive, and that's very important. Because that means that they're going to go on to another life, and they don't fear death as much. That's very, very important. Unless they've lived a really pretty nasty life, in some parts of the astral world, people are very selfish. And they do start getting worried. They get worried about what's going to happen when they get to the mental world. Because they've heard, somewhat correctly, that those people who have led a mentally selfish existence, and we're all mental beings, human beings by nature are mental, will tend to spend a good deal of their life mentally going back over the moments in time, their past time. It's called the mental Akashic experience. And a good deal of their time going over what they did, trying to find truth to their inner lives and outer lives that they explain to people. That's right. And the experience is a lot more stressful than it seems initially. Let me go into it. Okay, so you've had a nice life, but you've been somewhat egotistical, arrogant even at times, and you didn't get much beyond a certain, we'll say, the midpoint of the astral world, and so you still got a lot of work to be done in your astral body, and now you've come to the end of your astral body's existence because the senses are starting to wear out and the body just is going to die. Usually you get signals of this. And some people can literally choose when they might want to leave the astral world. The more advanced they are, the more they can do so without much trouble. The people who are pretty selfish astrally may have to just wait till that sort of thing happens just the way it does in the physical world. So the body gets to the point where it can't support life anymore, and the soul thinks it's a good time to be leaving. But regardless, everybody's going to end up, except evil people, everybody's going to end up in a mental world. And they're going to go to a place called the lower mental world. What's the difference? What's a lower mental world? It has to do with the structure of thought. Structure of thought in the lower mental world has in it form. They're called thought forms. And most people, when they think as much or more in structured thought of thought forms than they do anything called concepts. Okay, concepts are kind of like non-form. They're almost like waves of thought that have within them the time structure as well as the application for a formula for thought. So it's a formula for how structure could be made in the lower world, but these concepts are in the higher mental world. So the concepts are in the higher mental world where the formulas are for the thought that's going to take place in the lower mental world. And you might say, well, what's a concept again? Can you go in a little? Okay, yeah, I can explain a little better. Think of a concept as a general rule that applies to a whole bunch of examples, and the more truthful the concept is, the more it fulfills a lot of examples. And if it's extremely truthful, then it applies to all examples of that time. Wow. So all the thought forms that make up any example under a, we'll call it a wave of a concept, is then represented in form in the lower mental world, and is done so without virtually any breaking apart between the concept and the form. The form is not isolated from the concept because it so represents the concept perfectly, and the concept has no forms that are contradictory to it that could be made in the lower mental world. Wow, that's truth. Truth, that's what we call truth. Now you could say, well, that was still pretty conceptual. Yeah, I know. That's one of the problems when you're trying to explain a concept, is it's extremely conceptual. And there's no way to get around that problem. That sounds redundant, I know, but it's the truth. Okay, so that's where one of the things that we can work on some more at another time. So, people are living within their own concepts and thought forms. If the concepts are unwhole, then the thought forms are many times limited, and there are contradictory thought forms that create untruth relative to the concept that they're trying to represent. Those untruths have a destructive part of them that forces a person to be unable to join together whole time. So they can't make a thought that gets past usually the present. Because in order to get to the future, their thought has to be able to live into the future and still be whole enough to exist. I know this stuff is far out. Look, at least I can try to explain it. You know, how many people can do that, right? Okay, so it's way out there in our thinking processes to even consider this, that we could have the inability to truly conceive thought that will exist, survive in its existence in the future because it's untrue. The more it's untrue, the less it can live in the future, and the less we can live in the future. And a lot of people's thoughts, if they're into what is called the Akashic experience, is actually only relatively whole in the past. Even in the present, it hasn't survived because it doesn't have virtually any truth in it. In other words, the person was just a blatant liar and created a good deal of their life. And some of this life could have been still while they were in the astral world, but a lot of it was in the physical world. A good deal of their life was living lies, either telling other people lies or living them in themselves. And this creates for them the only thought that can exist within as being unwhole thought in the past and isolated results of that unwhole thought in the present. They can't make new thought in the present unless they usually are working very, very hard on it to correct the thought from the past. And that's what happens to people when they go to the mental world in the beginning. They've got to get this thought that they have created, and it's a lifetime. It's a long time. It's hundreds of years in the astral world, up to 100 plus years in the physical world for some people. All that thought has to be converted into whole thought so they can live in the present and future normally. And they want to do that because they want to have more of a life than the life they can have. What is a life they can have? They can only experience themselves, some servers, and in some circumstances, people who are even more selfish than themselves. Whoa, that doesn't sound like much fun. It isn't. And it's extremely lonely and isolated. People are like in their own, sometimes homes, castles, whatever you want to call them, because they create these out of their own mental form, but alone. Virtually alone. And for how long? Well, the dilation time is considerably greater because this thing called the quantum constant keeps growing in the mental worlds, mental subworlds. And you could be, there could be dozens of times, 30, 40, 50, 90 times greater than is time here. So a year here could be 50 years, 60 years, or more in the mental world. Wow. Now that gives you pause, right? But here you are, and at the beginning of your experience, depending upon how truthful you have been, you're spending a lot of time trying to get your thoughts from the past to be corrected. Mm. And people can spend hundreds of years doing that while they are virtually alone. Yeah, talk about isolation. Mm. That's a serious problem. Now, of course, it sounds terrible. I realize that. But it's a self-created issue because they're going back to being their soul, and they have to work as hard as possible to create themselves back to being the soul. And guess where the soul is? The soul's in the higher mental world, and it doesn't create any concepts that aren't true. So if you're going to recreate yourself into a being that thinks in truth, guess what you've got to do? You've got to think in truth. You don't think in truth, you're cooked. That's the end of the game. And you're going to be in a lot of trouble. Now, does that mean that no one goes back to their soul till they complete this process? No, actually they do. But the more they go back to their soul without creating truth, the more they had an incomplete life, and the more narrow their experience was in that life. So the mental plane is a place to catch up. It's a place to change what has been, literally. They are changing the past by going back in and experiencing the past as a reality to them. People think the Akasha is some kind of book that you read about yourself or something. No, it isn't that at all. I realize there are some texts that describe it that way because they were written for people who didn't have the capacity to understand dilations in time and understanding that time has all these. It was too far advanced in thinking for people of that age. So they made it nice. They made it sort of like a little fantasy story. You read the book and you find out things about your past, and maybe there's others who are there judging you. And it's not true, but it's you know, it gives some people some idea of what it might be like to live in this Akashic experience. But it really is this. The people that go to the mental world are spending some of their time in a past experience, usually from that lifetime. It could be from a prior life, and that's where it really gets interesting. And they're reliving the actual experience that they had, including the untruthful lies that they created during that time. And then the only way they can improve their thought and get it closer to a more truthful concept is to change their responses while in the experience. You might say, well, once they figured it out, why don't they just do it? You see, once they go into this experience, their unwhole thought causes them to lose some of their self-structure. So they're in a semi-dreamlike state. They're not like true dreams because they still have a better understanding of who they are and other factors. And depending upon how long they've been doing it, sometimes they have a very good understanding. But for some people, at the beginning of the process, they're pretty well lost. They don't have a good self-structure. So they can't go in it without becoming consumed by it and sometimes reacting exactly in the thought process that they had before and recreating the same lie or lies over and over again. And that ain't no fun, as I say. Just going back over the same experiences dozens, hundreds of times until you change. Now, did you get some help? There are certain helpers, some people from the astral world, some people from the physical world while they sleep can actually serve and help in the mental world. And then there's people who are awake in the mental world. We're going to get to that in the next half of the show. But the thing is that those people can only help as much as when the person comes out of this experience, they can have a discussion with them about it and say, well, you know, you're still kind of hanging on to a lot of egotism here and there, and you're not getting those senses, the mental senses, aware enough so you can even understand what I'm telling you. That's a big problem, because you can't be helped by someone who's trying to help you because your senses are blocking their thought. You're going to go back in and have the same kind of experience over again. The other thing these servers can do is they can actually enter into the Akashic state, and they can manipulate things to some extent. Their thoughts are so much more powerful than the thought of the individual caught in the experience. They can manipulate it so the person may change their thought. That's a lot of fun. It is fun for the server. I don't know if it's a great deal of fun for the person who's being served, but for a lot of them, that's the only way to get them to change, because their thinking is so set in stone. Okay, so you do this about four general areas of life. One of them deals mostly with the physical world and physical things, dense physical things, and how people reacted mentally to those kinds of things. Did they create a lot of lies so they could get things and keep things, or did they use their mind to try to be of service to others and help to get the truth done? The truth, by the way, is not telling the truth. The truth is getting others to respond to what you think is the truth, provided you're wise enough, so that they will enter into creating truth themselves. For people who are very selfish, you can't tell them the truth. You can only tell them usually a bunch of lies that gets them to eventually think in the truth. It's a weird type of situation. So everything's kind of upside down, because when people don't have mental sense, it's very hard to get them to think in ways that are whole, wise, complete. Very hard to get them to do that. You have probably noticed this already. Okay, so we're going to keep going for about another 2 minutes, and then we'll take a break. I'm saying this because we have a sort of a substitute engineer tonight, Don. I hope you're listening. And I sometimes give him a little cue that we're going to be doing that. Okay, so the next place that you do it, there's a subplane. It's called the seventh subplane. It corresponds to the physical world, the physical plane. But then you can graduate from that and end up in the sixth. You can sometimes go back and forth. That's a little too complicated to explain how that works. And when you're in the sixth, you're really dealing with how much truth you created during astral life, or when you were into your astral feelings, even if you were physically alive. And so you deal with that. And then in the fifth subworld of the mental world, you're dealing with how you dealt with your mental thought processes during all the time that you were physically, astrally, and also the remaining time, the prior time in the mental world that you've been alive. So you're going to get to the fifth world. You're trying to actually create and correct some mental thoughts that deal directly with the thought forms themselves rather than just things. So you'd be more concerned about, you're moving into the concept realm. You're really dealing with the thought forms themselves and whether they produce some element of truth for yourself and for others. And then finally, you deal with how much truth you created spiritually, and that's the fourth subworld. And that's an interesting place. We'll talk a lot more about these, and I'll explain more when we come back. And we will be doing that in about 2 minutes or so from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for a better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight we're talking about lower mental plane life. Oh, and you could say, well, are we really going to get into some interesting good stuff? Yes. Most of the rest of this time is going to be about that. I stopped about spiritual issues. People, when they go to the fourth subworld of the lower mental plane, that's as high as you can get, are dealing with their thoughts about spirit and God and how they live their thinking in that respect. You might say, well, how can you be truthful about that? It's how you used what you had as an understanding to direct actions and thoughts and feelings in all the worlds that you were in. So it's really about that. The ability to balance the three parts of time and make it more whole in terms of being wise and giving. So if you have giving wisdom and you have developed a significant amount of that, then you don't have too much trouble in this fourth subworld. But if not, you might not do so well there. So this is a good show to be listening to for those people who might have some concern about that. Okay. Eventually, you either wear out your senses in part of your mental body and can't function any longer in one of these subworlds and go to a different one, or you actually get them working better. That's the best part. And if you do, you retain them to some extent, and they're still useful for you. And once you awaken in any one of these subworlds to the point where you can truly understand by sensing correctly other people's thought around you, and you no longer are trapped in your own past with all of those untruths holding you back, because you've gone over them and made them whole again, then at that point, you can now live in your future. You live in your present and the future with full understanding of the past and being able to use it with wisdom. It's a really cool existence, because now you get awakened. You were lonely before, but now you're awakened to a multitude of people who are doing the same thing. They are awake, and they are living part of what it means to be a soul. They are actually living out scenarios, because they can create them in their own thought, of a future life. Usually it's their coming future life, but they live, and they also do this for all others that they're doing it with, and they're doing it with hundreds of other people at a time, and people come and go within the scenarios. And they add and they subtract from each person's life. And it's just a fascinating phenomenon. And they can redo it and redo it usually with different people coming in, others not. And it's a great experiment, you can call it. It's a virtual reality, but to them it's a complete reality. They actually get to live their life together, and just as it might be, starting with the physical world. Many of them never get much beyond that until they go back to being their soul, and then they might live some of their life in the astral and coming mental worlds in the next lifetime as well. But mostly, they focus on the physical life because that's the hardest. And so they try to get that right. Now you say, how do you get it right? Well, because they're so much wiser and more advanced than where they were while they were physically and astrally alive, they come together and they have instinct information sharing back and forth in their thought about how things are going as they live out these lifetimes, because they're going through it over and over again in a different way, changing it around. And each person is getting to contribute a philosophy and a reason for changing such and such, and themselves in relationship, putting themselves in a new kind of life. And what that life is totally up to them. They're not going to relive the past life. It's going to be something new and creative and different. And they're also going to include some things that are going to be inventions that they believe will exist in a future world. Talk about science fiction. This is unbelievable, because you get to deal with things that aren't even yet created, and you get to try them out, and you get to see how it's going to affect everybody. You're not so concerned about the technologies as you are what effects they have on people. It's fascinating. And you're concerned about how you're interacting with all the others who are choosing to interact with you. And it's all voluntary. Each person is doing so based upon what they perceive to be their past karma, which they know a lot about because they've been in this Akashic experience for quite some time, and what they're going to be facing to some extent while they're physically alive and then astrally and mentally. And they get to change within the parameters of what they believe, and usually they're pretty close on this, to be their coming karma. They also control the karma. How do they control it? By deciding which, quote-unquote, spiritual genes they're going to enact and how they're going to create that life to get rid of some of the things that are selfish in themselves, have been in prior lifetimes, and some things they want to develop as virtues and create greatness in these future lifetimes. It's absolutely intriguing. Far more interesting than the life most people live while they're physically or even astrally alive. This is really cool stuff. If I sound like I'm up on it, I am. I really think it's great. And the thing that's so wonderful about it is that there's no such thing as what we consider usually to be mistakes, because you're truly living as a co-creator with your soul and God, much more than you ever were in most circumstances, in either the astral or physical world. You're very close to being a soul while you're awake in the lower mental world. Now, you're not fully the soul. What's the difference? Well, the difference is the soul has the full understanding of all the virtue that has been created in all prior lifetimes. Only some of that's available to a person in the lower mental world. They're not fully their soul yet. They don't have this enormous mind that the soul has. But they're going to become that. They're going to awaken to that as they co-create in the lower mental world. They become closer and closer to being their souls because they're making themselves into that being. And they'll just awaken to it. Some people don't fully get that far and they actually fall asleep, but they awaken to being their souls anyway. It's just that they don't get the full excitement of the experience, the wonder of the experience by being fully the creator into it. And that's the best way to do it. Everybody tries to make that happen for all the other people participating in life in the mental world. It's truly living a life of great, great creativity and individuality, greater than anything anybody does here. But at the same time, incredible sharing and group consciousness. It's the best of both sides of God's mind. And it's put together in a way in which it's like a dance. It's like for one part of whatever you're doing, there's the giving side where you're sharing and helping everyone else, and on the other side, you're being super individually creative and making new things happen for you and for others, all while you're giving it and helping them to do the same. What an amazing, amazing place. These experiences are not fantasies, which a lot of people think is what I'm talking about when I say this. You actually get the direct experience without having the senses and bodies, yes, but you have the direct experiences in a mental sense, which you can reconstruct what it sort of would feel like. You don't get the direct feeling, but you don't get the direct physical or astral feeling, but you get the mental equivalent. And so you know what that next life might be in the scenario that you're involved in. Sometimes just scrap it and say, yeah, this isn't working. I don't like this. And others might do the same. There are some scenarios in the mental world that are played out, especially in the lower ones, like the sixth and seventh subworlds, that just don't work out. And the people work on it, and they try very hard, but it's like a symphony where everybody's off key. It just doesn't come together. And they just scrub it. They say, okay, that isn't going to work. So everybody's got to pick a different way of living, probably new type of personality. Remember, they're going to create their personalities. Whoa. And, I mean, this is so neat. It's just amazing, because every element of what a person considers to be meaningful and creative is found in the mental world. Most of it's missing here in the physical world, and a lot of it's missing in the astral. And people get incredible meaning from even a day of life in the mental world. Like one day of conscious, full consciousness in the mental world is when you're not stuck in that stupid Akasha, is the equivalent of maybe a year's meaningful life in the physical world. It's so intense. And there's so much that we're capable of changing about the experience. It's truly, you know, we get to experience what a soul really is. And we're only scratching the surface, even if we live very creatively in God's light in this world, in the physical world. Because the limits of physics are so far against us. The dimensionality is so limited that we really have, no matter how wonderful we are, we can't even come close to what we can live in the mental world. So, now you say, well, can you give a few more examples? Yes, of course, I'd love to. Let's put it like this. I wake up in the middle world, although you don't sleep much in the middle world, and I say, today's the day I think I'm going to become this. And let's say this is, I think I'll be an astronaut who is going to go off and in the next life, start doing some terraforming, possibly on Mars, or maybe just a few asteroids, put them together, make myself a little mini planet or something. And I wonder who else is interested in doing that. I put that idea out there, and suddenly, oh, I got dozens of others. I've got 100 people. They're all thinking with me. And they say, yeah. Now, if you're going to do that, what's your karma? And this is my karma. I can be this way. You could be that way. How can we relate together? What kind of relationship might we form? I mean, that's how it starts, just like that. And others start joining in. And each person might change, might say, well, if you're going to do that, then I think I'll change who I'm going to be or how I'm going to do this so that we can relate together. But what about the dozen or two dozen other people that we're going to relate to? And when are they going to come into this life? We aren't going to be all together, so we'll be segmented during certain time periods. And what sort of things might we do to try to find each other? And how are we going to create the personality so it doesn't screw off and do something really bad? Because we've got to worry about that. That's always a problem. Once we're in the physical form, we're going to be in complete illusion. We're going to realize who we really are. So we've got to kind of do the best we can to form this as quickly and as meaningfully as possible before we do all the crazy stuff that might wreck these relationships that we're trying to have right now. And then they do a test. They actually put themselves, and they'll take time periods. just like they do in the Akasha, where you go through time periods not sequentially, but you go through time periods based upon the commonality of experience. They do exactly the same thing, but this is in future time, not in the past. And as they're creating this new life, they'll say, well, this is what I want to create in terms of this element of being wise, how to give to others in a way that helps them to develop better romantic involvement with somebody. I'm picky, so I think people will be interested in here. Better romantic involvement with somebody. And I'm going to try to be helpful in that respect, and by being both an example of it and at the same time helping others to do it. I think I'll have a couple of kids that I'll try to direct in that way. But beyond that, I want to be able to do this more on a larger scale. And I'm going to go ahead and create a personality that won't do something that's so toxic to prevent that from being created. And then 10 other people jump in and they say, okay, well, I'll be one of your romantic interests during this period of time, because during that time I want to be doing this and I think you want to be doing that. And another person comes in and says, oh, I'll jump ahead in time 20 years ahead of that. And then when that 20 years comes up, then I'll be available with my new person that I'm creating. And I think that personality is going to have to work through a bunch of stuff before we meet. You're getting how complicated it is? It's like you got to be super brilliant to be able to participate in this. That means you have to have very clear thoughts, that you've got to have increased your overall level of intelligence by maybe tenfold from where it was while you're living in the astral world, and maybe a lot more than that while you're living in the physical world. People are brilliant, even the ones that we used to think were not so brilliant in earlier existence are brilliant in the mental world, and souls are even more brilliant. It takes a great deal of thinking to be involved in this, so much so that if you were a helper with great, great wisdom from the physical world, but you're up in the mental world, with just an average person who's fully awake in the mental world, you might not even come close to them in their ability to think. Even though you might be a great thinker in the physical or astral world, you're not yet there. You haven't cleared your mental body of all the issues that you have to and brought in unity to it to be able to participate in this amazing level of co-creation. Tremendous level of co-creation. Does it sound like I'm excited about this stuff? Yeah, I am. How much better is mental plane life than physical or astral? Well, I don't think there's a way to compare it, because we're working on totally different things. In the physical world, we're completely weighed down with materiality. Materiality is most of our existence. Mental thought becomes almost, for a lot of people, like, well, I'll think about that 3 hours from now, because right now I've got to just be able to get this physical thing done. Yeah, the more you're entranced with that kind of existence, the less you can live as a mental world denizen. And the amazing thing about this is that it takes the physics of the mental world to truly become enabled by the process I'm talking about. In some ways, we almost can't do it here. You need more wholeness. You've got to have more senses. There has to be greater dimensionality. The speed of light has to be greater. All kinds of things have to take place. That quantum constant thing that I was talking about has to be a lot greater. So many things have to take place to allow us the opportunity to live as I'm describing. Where does it all lead to? Because I've only got a few minutes here. Well, it ends up with eventually some of these scenarios becoming more and more successful, so that there's cohesiveness. They can get through more than 5 years or 10 years. They can get through maybe most of a lifetime. And there are different, there's scenario number 1 through 100, okay? Each one could be adopted, but they can't adopt them. The lower mental world people are too unwhole to be able to say, yeah, we're going with this. They become scenarios that, as they rejoin their soul, the souls have been doing the same thing but at a much higher level, more complete. Whole lifetimes are completed by the souls, whereas most of the time, a few years to a decade for mental world inhabitants is considerable amount of time. Now, yes, in the higher mental world, in the fourth sub-world, if people who lived a long mental life, they could sometimes get up into like 40, 50, 60 years of physical world life, and they could also sometimes start even working on some of what their astral life will be. But the souls are much better at this. And remember, we're talking about what happens is we awaken to being our soul. We never die. Forget about death, that's a bunch of nonsense. You do not die. You just grow in consciousness. And every life that you grow in consciousness into is greater and better than the last one. So there's nothing that's lost except the selfish parts. If we haven't worked out a selfish part, especially in the mental akasha, it's just because part of our mental genes and some of the negative karma we're going to have to deal with in our next lifetime. That's why you want to try to get rid of that as best as possible before you wear out your senses in the mental world. And before, of course, you awaken. Once you awaken, anything that's left in that part of the mental body from the subworld that you're in just becomes part of the mental gene. And you can't really go back to it. It's done. And you awaken, some people awaken all four times into the four subworlds. And during that time, they just live this incredible life. Even a year, if you're living in the fourth subworld, that could be, wow. A year could be like 90 years. A year here would be the equivalent of 90 years. And so, all told, it's not uncommon for people to live 1,000 years, 1,000 mental plane years. And to them, it's 1,000 years of existence. Now, some of that time, I have to tell you, spent in the Akasha. And it's up to each person to determine that time based upon how much they're willing to let go of their egotism. But nonetheless, I hope I've explained something about mental life, lower mental life. I've been over it before, but never quite as I explained it tonight. Yes, could we go another hour? Could I tell you a lot more in detail? Could we even role play it, as I've done in workshops that I've done in this area? Fascinating. Spent a whole day role playing this whole thing out. Very difficult, but well worth it. Anyway, that's something for the future. And for right now, I'm just going to mention that if you haven't had a chance, check out Ideal Cell Sorption Resveratrol. Hey, if you're not using it, I am. I'm getting younger. Check me out. You'll see. I'm getting younger. But besides that, it really works, and it makes you it's just a fascinating product. ForeverYoungProducts.com. And if you want to know more about it, call 800-777-7850. And you can get more about it. It works even better on animals. If you have an animal, special animal, that you wanted to keep it alive a lot longer and healthier, less vet bills do, try the same product in the veterinary formula. It works. If you haven't heard about Soul Balance, get Soul Balance. Soul Balance is the thing that makes your soul and you in balance and therefore staying healthy. I can't tell you any more about it because we're just about out of time, but you can get Soul Balance from Life Balance Association. 602-472-5127, or just call the 800 number that I gave earlier. That's also on the website, and you can check that out. You can go to agelesswisdom.com and find out more about stuff that we're doing. I hope you do. If you need to email me, thoughts@whylifeis.com, I would love to hear from you. I am available to do that at any time, and if you want, we can even have a chat. Because I'm open to doing that as well. I hope today's show has made some difference in people's attitude about life after death, after physical death anyway. Remember, you go back to being your soul. And that's the most critical element to get over the fear of death. Many people, when they do talk to me, their biggest concern is they're afraid of death. If you're still afraid of death, call me or email me and I can help you more. But there's no reason to be afraid of death. The fear of death really puts you in odds with your soul because you tend to live more selfishly. And souls don't want you to be selfish, as you can tell from today's show. Okay, we're out of time for right now. Until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.